This hour of the Kevin Miller Show is brought to you by MinutemanRx.com. American families, American veterans, taking care of Americans, fighting for America.
Good morning, Treasure Valley.
Well, the Valley Women and Children's Shelter has been open since the beginning of February now. We are in need of pretty much everything you use in your day-to-day life, times about 500.
Fighting for Idaho.
Well, I just want to say thank you to you, First Miller, and the generous people of Treasure Valley for keeping the rescue mission lights on and helping us through the summer here.
Fighting for you.
Kevin, I want to say this, and I mean this sincerely. In English translation, that means I know the kind of man you are by the way you walk.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the morning.
Thank you all. I wish I would have dressed up.
On 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And here we are back at the Palatial Broadcast Center, K. Miller in the morning. At 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station. Coming up, if you missed our talk with Governor on Friday, we will share that with you. Of course, you can always reach us via social media, by our blogs at 580KIDO.com, and on the Twitter as well. As we start the day here, you know, a few thoughts. The Bo Bergdahl situation continues to evolve. We will talk to Governor Otter about that if you missed it. If you've caught it on the podcast, this will be there'll be a test at the end of the hour. Also, Dave Petzl will join us. We'll take a look at what is going on with our own financial mind, if you will, the host of Money Matters. And Colonel Oliver North will join us coming up today in the 7 o'clock hour. We want to make sure that you get that. And certainly Colonel North, an American hero, he has a lot to talk about, a lot to say. And here we like to listen, so we will do that as we move along. One thing I do want to get with you before we go to our interview with Governor Otter, and this is a comment that we played for you last week, but we didn't really get a chance to go on and on. I just want to share this with you one more time throughout the day here.
We're so much like Afghanistan. I wish I could write a book about that. Our character is a lot alike. The mountain, desert environment breeds tough people. People who know how to farm here and make a living, and it's hard. But it makes you tough, and it does. If it doesn't kill you, it makes you tougher.
It really does. It really does indeed. But do you agree with that statement by Bob Bergdahl? And do you believe that the criticism of Mr. and Mrs. Bergdahl is warranted? Now the FBI has been called in. Let me repeat that. The FBI has been called in because of threats to their lives. Their lives are being threatened now, and the FBI has to come in. Now, many people, like our own Bill O'Reilly and others, will say, good! And Bill O'Reilly accusing Bob Bergdahl of being a Muslim. Look, I love this forum. I love the speech. I love the opinion, even if I don't agree with it. And as I told somebody the other day, maybe I'm biased because I spent some brief periods with the Bergdahls. We've urged people to pray for Bo Bergdahl's release. Now we heard that he's tortured. There's more to the story. I believe there's more to the story. And aren't we as Americans, with respect to those veterans and those people that died in Afghanistan and throughout the military, to hear the whole story? Or is this entire thing a rush to judgment that we accuse the libs of doing? Very emotional. Look, I am not one to sit there and cast aspersions on anybody at 580KIDO. But on the other hand, it hit me in church yesterday. It hit me in church as I'm sitting there listening to Father Len preach the homily that, you know, there has to be another side to this that the obviously the mainstream media is not going to give you. And maybe that's our job here. All right, now time for our encore interview with Governor Otter. He's happy to go, and he calls me neighbor.
Is this Kevin?
Yes, sir. How you been?
All right, good, neighbor. How you doing?
I'm out here at Walmart.
Well, I understand that. Good for you. You're a great American. You know, Kevin, the Women and Children's Shelter, and who else you working with?
We're working with the Lighthouse Rescue Mission, the Women and Children's Shelter out here in Canyon County, Governor, urging people to come out. I know you're a big supporter and a big giver.
God bless you. Is Roscoe with you?
Oh, he's running around. Usually he is, though, every morning.
Yeah, bless his heart. And yours.
Thanks
for doing that.
Well, thank you, sir, and good to have you with us. Some big questions for you. Your thoughts on the Republican Party post-primary, where do we go from here?
Well, hopefully we had a unity rally. I don't know if you covered it, but we had a unity rally the next morning, Wednesday morning, on the Capitol steps after the Tuesday vote, and we were all making an effort to come back together and go forward into November with a single point of effort to make a good victory for us in November.
Well, Governor, you're a veteran public servant, a veteran political operative. How important is it that the Republicans are unified, considering the threat from the Democrats in the November election?
Well, I think, first off, let me say, I think we are coming together. We've been trying to work out our differences, and I've talked to Russ several times, and I know that other congressional or other constitutional officers have talked to their primary opponents. So I believe we are unifying and sticking to the issues and the principles of the Republican Party. I have every confidence that we'll come together and we will be victorious in November.
Well, Governor, we take a look at just some of the other issues coming up. It's kind of the summertime, but, you know, people are still concerned about the roads, the transportation, and the economy.
Right. Well, Kevin, I think you are aware, we've talked about this before, but let me remind you that we have a study going on now from the University of Idaho and the McClure Foundation, the McClure Institute, to actually go out to the people and ask the people if they believe that we need to spend more money on roads, and if we do, where do we get the money, and how do we equalize our user pay for those roads. I drive in from Star every day just like you do, and when I'm sitting there on State Street and Old Highway 55 at the stoplight in my Ford pickup, that gets about 15 miles to the gallon, somebody in an electric car pulls right up next to me. I'm paying 25 cents every 14 or 15 miles I drive because they have an electric car, and God bless them for that effort. But they're not paying the same price that I am. And so I think one of the things that we need to do is we really need to make sure that there's equal pay for equal use.
Governor Otter with us here at 580KIDO. Governor, I can't avoid this question, the Bo Bergdahl situation.
Oh boy.
Your thoughts, sir?
Well, Kevin, there's just way too many unknowns that I know. The one thing I do know, so I'm not going to speculate on what's beyond what I know. And what I know is that after almost 5 years, a young man from Idaho no longer is in enemy hands. I also know, being ex-military, that there are processes in place through the Judge Advocate General's office and the military and in Congress for determining what comes next. And I'm one of those that's going to let that process run its course and make my decisions after I get the facts.
And we respect that, Governor. Are you amazed at the rush to judgment one way or the other?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm amazed at is that we're overlooking, like I said, I think, the joy of this person now being out of the enemy's hands. And you know, that was at least my first response. Anything that comes afterwards, and I know that some of his comrades in arms have made some statements. I don't know the facts, and so I'm celebrating the fact that he's released. Whether or not the Obama administration followed the law, I could almost tell you historically they haven't done very well in following the rule of law and notifying Congress, and so those things are just going to have to sort themselves out, Kevin.
Well, Governor, that's a good point that you make, having been in Congress and know those folks, and the speculation on did the president break the law, and you're a big fan of the separation of powers. This is hopefully someone will get to the bottom of that one.
Well, I think when you see the bipartisan question to the governor, now, Dianne Feinstein is no stalwart conservative, for instance, like Cruz is, or many other folks in Congress that I could name. But she was really upset by the fact that the president did not come to Congress, did not inform them. The last time they had any real correspondence about it, according to her on television, was 30 days ago or longer. But there was, you know, there was nothing pending at that time. There was no request, or what do you think? This is what I'm going to do. And, you know, that just seems to be the standard operating procedure by this administration, is that, you know, they think they're a kingdom, and instead of one of a three separation and separation of powers and three branches of government that are supposed to have equal authority.
Well, Governor, we seem to be focusing in on national news as a veteran and as someone who wants to make sure veterans not only in Idaho but across the country are taken care of. Your thoughts on what's going on with this VA scandal?
Well, you know, I think it's deplorable. I was once told, and I believe this, that if you want to see what our military in the future looks like, which is one of the most important, the defense of this country, one of the most important authorities of government and proper roles of government, if you want to see what our future military is going to look like, look how we take care of our veterans today. And that tells me that our military in the future isn't going to look very good. I believe that axiom. But I can tell you this, we may have a little problem now and then in Idaho, but Idaho has one of the best veteran organizations, hospitals, our ability to respond to the veterans' needs in the nation. In fact, I think the last score for us was we were number two in the nation for being able to medically take care of our veterans.
Well, and that is so important. Governor Otter with us here at 580KIDO. Governor, final thoughts. The lands issue continues to resonate. We heard about what you had to say about it. You've said it many times here and everywhere else. Your thoughts on the West and their push to get the lands back, sir?
Well, interestingly enough, we've got a Western governor's meeting in Colorado next week. John Hickenlooper, the Democrat governor of Colorado, is the chairman of that. I was the chairman back in 2010. And I can tell you this, that we're pretty unified in our effort to be able to control what happens on federal lands in our states. And Congress responded to that sometime in February this year, where when they passed the agricultural bill, they gave authority to the governors to identify in their states those areas that were either bug kill, that were overgrown, or were disease kill, and all three threats of fire. We identified 12 million acres out of the 21 million acres of federal ground in the state of Idaho. We submitted a plan where we want to go in and be able to clean up and use within our economy the trees, the resources off the 1,800,000 acres that we think is under immediate threat. And I submitted that plan. Secretary Vilsack said that Idaho's plan was a good pro forma for us to go forward. So next week when we meet in Colorado, my plan is the one that I'm going to present to the rest of the Western governors as an example of what we ought to be doing in the West and letting us as governors actually make those decisions about the management of those lands, because good management is fire prevention.
And Governor, final thought. Let's just talk a little bit about Western values and comparatively to other values in the country. We're getting ready for the Snake River Stampede, Caldwell Knights Rodeo, the celebration of the West. As a cowboy, what would you like to say about Western values at 580KIDO?
Well, I have shared many times with you and with your listeners, Kevin, the Code of the West. And it's 10 principles that we follow. But the underlying idea of that is we in the West seem to understand that rules can change. And rules do change. We change rules. We change laws all the time. But principles do not change. And so our principle of being independent, of being self-governed, of being free in order to exercise the God-given liberties that God gave us when we were all born, that's the main value that we have in the West. And all of those are embodied in the Constitution and the amendments thereto. And so, you know, I think when we say that we are going to defend the Constitution, when we constitutional officers raise our hands, I'm obligated to defend our Constitution. I can't pick and choose like Obama and the Democrats seem to be wanting to do. Is they want to choose those things, and that's why the criticism that I'm getting right now on the defense of marriage and our constitutional directive under Article 3, Section 28 of the Constitution that was passed in 2006 by over 60% of the people in Idaho, that said we identified legal marriage in Idaho as that union between one man and one woman. Kevin, I can't just say, well, I don't like this part of the Constitution personally, and so I'm not going to defend it. So one of our great principles is sticking to our principles.
And, Governor, we commend you, and we're right behind you with defense of marriage, sir.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
Governor, have a great day. We'll see you around Star.
Kevin, raise lots of money out there.
I will. Take care now.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
580 KIDO, let's get you to work safely and on time.
Ramsey, weekdays noon till 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
We're so much like Afghanistan. I wish I could write a book about that. Our character is a lot alike. The mountain, desert environment breeds tough people. People who know how to farm here and make a living, and it's hard, but it makes you tough. And it does, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you tougher.
There we have it, the comments of Bob Bergdahl at the news conference, and everybody continues to want to know this. But the question I have, by the way, good morning, Kevin Miller with you here at 580KIDO. The questions that I have for you, and it's a very spiritual thing for me, because we all get lost in the glamour of the Today Show, Bill O'Reilly laying the smack down. Bill O'Reilly, smart guy, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet on television, as we watch him every night on the Fox News channel. But, and I know Pat from Middleton is about ready to smack me right now for saying this. Oh, I can hear Pat saying this. Oh, the return of liberal Kevin. Have we jumped to conclusions concerning Sergeant Bergdahl? We know that he was tortured. We know that it wasn't fun and games with the Taliban. And do we owe it to his family, to God, to the country, to give them the benefit of the doubt? I know how stories can destroy people. As many of you know, there are two things that document my career. The Duke Lacrosse case, that they called me Mr. A-Block on television, and the Obama incident in Pittsburgh. And I know the power of the press. We know the power of the press. But it hit me the other day as I was in church praying to God last night next to Mrs. Miller and thinking to myself, Kevin, you've spent 5 years supporting this man, 5 years praying, 5 years for this kid to come home, and now, because we have these stories, true or not, it's time to throw the baby out with the bathwater. People saying that Bo Bergdahl should be hung? Heck, we haven't even done anything to the blind sheik. We haven't done anything to anything else. And yet everybody has an opinion concerning Sergeant Bergdahl. We're in Idaho. This is our story, right?
It's hard to be comfortable when you really haven't been briefed on the intricacies of carrying out this agreement.
What I know today is what the President of the United States knows, that it would have been offensive and incomprehensible to consciously leave an American behind, no matter what, in the hands of people who had tortured him, cut off his head, do any number of things.
The Department of Defense needs to do a very thorough investigation. Obviously, those soldiers are very, very concerned and upset by it, and if their account is true, they should be. You jeopardize other soldiers when you walk away from your post, period and end of story, and that's a serious matter in a combat zone.
We have the obligation to do whatever we can to bring any of our captured servicemen and women back, but the question is at what cost?
Now they come back, and because he is in decent health considering where he's been, they've changed their story. They said, well,
No, we suspect his life may be in danger. If word got out of this pending possible trade, that his life may be in danger.
They feel the administration lied to them, broke the law, and then they just look at the magnitude of the deal, and they just don't see the big victory that the president's talking about.
I think the question of whether he suffered enough should not at all relate to the question of whether he gets tried. Desertion is a very serious offense. It carries a penalty if it's done in wartime. That includes possibly the death penalty.
Oh, is that what we're going to do now? The death penalty for Bo Bergdahl at 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. And the idea that we don't punish anybody anymore. We've got the illegals running wild? We've got the illegals running wild. We have the president breaking his own laws. We have Susan Rice lying to Congress. We have Hillary Clinton lying to Congress. And the poor kid from Idaho, he's the bad guy. And first there were six, then there were 14 troops killed looking for him. No one should have been killed looking for him. But is there more to the story? 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com. Coming up, we'll talk immigration. We'll talk to you as we move along here. But think about this for a minute. Just the sheer vitriol that has been going on in this story. The sheer vitriol. How about a break? Or maybe you believe that Bo Bergdahl doesn't deserve a break. Kevin Miller, 580 KIDO.
News.
Weekday afternoons at 3 on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, good morning. Phone numbers 580-5436, Kevin at KIDOAM.com.
We're joined by our old friend Mark Corkin from the Center for Immigration Studies. And Mark is an American and someone who loves America. I have to ask you something totally unrelated. Your thoughts on the Bo Bergdahl story and the reaction in Washington and throughout the world.
Well, I mean, this is just me talking. It has nothing to do with Center for Immigration Studies. But, you know, if the guy was a deserter, why would we trade dangerous captives for him? It just doesn't, I don't buy it. It doesn't make sense.
And yet that seems to happen. I just have to wonder what the fallout is. And you that study the law, know the law, and again, this is you talking, it's amazing that we have people in Congress and throughout the world saying that the president broke the law.
Well, he did, but I mean, is that really a surprise? 6 years or 5.5 years after this guy's sworn in? I mean, he does it in everything else. He does it in immigration, of course, and Obamacare, health, environmental areas. So, you know, why would they bother to even check what the law is? They just have this sense that he won an election, so he gets to do anything he wants to do, period. So it's no surprise at all.
Let's talk a little about something that was gaining national attention before the Bergdahl case and the VA scandal, the continued push for amnesty. What's the latest?
Well, the most recent effort was to try to attach a tiny amnesty to a defense authorization bill. In other words, an amnesty that would allow certain illegal aliens to join the military and thereby get citizenship. Now, the number of people who would have been covered would have been tiny. You know, maybe a few hundred a year, maybe. But a couple of things torpedoed it. First of all, once you turn the lights on and expose that this is what they were trying to do, you know, all the, as the image goes, all the cockroaches ran away for their cracks in the kitchen. Because, you know, once it was obvious what they were trying to do here, attach an amnesty to a military bill, it made it hard to push. One of the reasons that really got people angry about it was that we are now actually pink slipping, laying off combat experienced American officers and enlisted personnel because of the downsizing of the military. And so why would we then open enlistment to illegal aliens? In other words, replacing American soldiers with illegal immigrants. That's part of what really ticked people off. But the important part as far as the inside baseball of Congress goes is that even though this was a tiny thing that maybe would have covered a couple hundred people a year, the point of the House leadership in doing this, and John Boehner and Eric Cantor, was to send it over to the Senate, where Harry Reid, who basically agrees with John Boehner and Eric Cantor on immigration, they have the same immigration views, would be able to stick a bigger amnesty into it, use that as kind of the camel's nose under the tent, send it back to the House, and then because it was part of the defense bill, they would have had to vote for it. And that tactic was just so repugnant to people that even some of the Democrats in the Senate said, wait, you know, we can't do that. That's just not right.
Mark, let's take a look at some other things here at 580KIDO. Apparently, there's massive amounts of illegals coming into Arizona, kids being dropped off. What's the latest there?
Yeah, that is actually the fallout from what's happening in South Texas. South Texas now, for a couple of years, has been seeing this surge in illegal immigration. You know, for all the president's talk about how this whole situation's all fixed and we have the border under control, South Texas, it's surging out of control there. And what's most recently happened is that large numbers of unaccompanied minors are being smuggled by smuggling rings into Texas. What it is they're illegal alien parents in the United States are looking at what the administration is doing, which is they're not enforcing the law. They're actually giving legal status now to more than 500,000 illegal immigrants who came as kids. And they're saying, look, we better, you know, let's take our opportunity now and have our own kids smuggled in, and Obama, who's our friend, will let them stay. And so you're seeing thousands. This year, they think something like 60,000 unaccompanied minors, they call them. Not really unaccompanied because paid smugglers are bringing them in. I wouldn't give my kid to a paid smuggler, even if he was living in El Salvador. But that's what people are doing. And the rate this is increasing, they think that the next year's total will be double that, 130,000 unaccompanied minors. And what this administration is doing is using that as an opportunity to basically negate immigration control. Because they're saying, we're not going to send these kids back. They're actually using this word. They are resettling them in the United States, dealing with this almost like as a refugee issue where the law doesn't matter. And all that does is send the signal back to Central America that all the rest of you should all come up here while the getting is good before the Americans change their mind.
Mark, what about the Republicans? Why do they continue to try and push for an amnesty deal?
Well, two reasons. One, the kind of crude reason, but it's part of it, is giant bags of money from corporate lobbyists. They want cheap labor, and Republicans, a lot of them, are very receptive to these cheap labor lobbyist claims. The other thing is that they imagine, a lot of Republicans have this idea that if only they adopt Obama's position on immigration, they will get more Hispanics to vote for them. It's sort of ridiculous. I mean, it's not sort of, it is completely ridiculous. It's a childish almost, and yet they see this as kind of a shortcut, a magic bullet to dealing with their problems in recruiting more Hispanic voters.
Yeah, that's the thing that you have, whether it's Marco Rubio or others saying, Rand Paul saying that the GOP needs to expand, and Lindsey Graham that the GOP has a Hispanic problem. But you take a look at the governments that these folks are coming from. They're big governments. They're totalitarian, so they're used to the nanny state. And why in the world would you cut off or vote for a party that's going to cut off your programs that you're benefiting from?
Yeah, and, you know, there's been a lot of research on this by all kinds of people that don't have an axe to grind. And what they found is that Hispanic voters, broadly speaking, are big government liberals. Not all of them. There's a good size chunk that aren't. And those people Republicans can, in fact, reach, and a lot of them vote Republican anyway. But on the whole, Hispanic voters are big government liberals. Let me just give you one statistic. This was done by the Pew Research Center, which is a liberal but an honest organization. They asked people, a whole bunch of people, what is your reaction to the words capitalism and the word socialism? And what they found is that Hispanics had the most negative response to the word capitalism of any group they checked. Even people who said they supported Occupy Wall Street liked capitalism more than Hispanic voters. So, the point is not that they're bad people. All kinds of people have those views. But why would you have an immigration policy that imports more and more people who just inevitably, not for bad reasons, they're just going to vote for the other party? It's not about people who are here now, but about immigration policy tomorrow. It's just irrational.
Mark Krikorian with us. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO, Center for Immigration Studies. So what happens if the spigot isn't turned off? And I have to admit, I don't see anybody that's turning the dial there.
Well, I mean, that's a good point. If immigration policy, and this isn't just illegal immigration, but legal immigration policy, isn't dialed back so we end up with a more moderate level of immigration than the 1 million plus per year that move here legally, the prospects for small government conservatism as a national viable political movement are really pretty dim. The Republican Party will survive no matter what because they'll just become more and more liberal as the electorate becomes more and more liberal because of immigration. But conservatism cannot survive without a more moderate level of immigration, which both will import fewer big government voters, but also give conservatives time and the immigrants themselves time to work on for the conservatives to persuade more and more immigrants. Over time, it might work. But look at what happened with regard to the last immigration wave. The grandchildren of a lot of those people didn't really become more, they didn't become Republicans, but more of them became Republicans, not really until Reagan. We're talking something like 100 years after the start of the previous immigration wave. It takes a long time for things like that to change. It doesn't just happen overnight, but one of the reasons it happens, but it happened last time, is because we reduced immigration. We had something like 50 years of pretty low immigration, allowing immigrants and their children and their grandchildren to basically, become more assimilated. And a lot of them kept voting Democrat, but their voting behavior became more like the rest of the country. And that can't happen if you just keep immigration going at a million a year forever.
Mark, tell me about the fallacy of the argument that we need to bring in guest workers. And I cannot say this enough at 580KIDO because Congressman Labrador believes in the guest worker program. He's on board to help the Republicans with the immigration deal. He's been quoted in front page of the Washington Times about this. So one of his major talking points is that we don't have enough smart people to work in these high-tech jobs. We always ask you about this because a lot of folks never get the information that you have. What's wrong with his argument that we don't have enough American engineers, we have to import them?
Yeah, I mean, that's just the numbers just don't show that. Nobody who has looked into this, and again, people all across the spectrum, Brookings Institution, the Rand Corporation, Pew Hispanic Center, I mean, people who are not, politically involved in the immigration debate, all find that there is simply no such thing as a shortage of potential technical workers. Now, we just did a study on this recently, and we looked at people who have degrees in science and technology. There's twice as many of them as there are jobs in science and technology, and the wages that are paid to people in these technical and scientific fields have not shot up in the way that you would expect they would if there was a shortage. The one technical area where wages have shot up is exactly the place you would expect it, petroleum engineers. Because of the fracking boom, the people who do that are now making more and more money. Well, that's a good thing. But the point is, it does show that all the other areas of technical and engineering and scientific fields, there isn't that kind of increase because there is no shortage.
What are we looking for next, Mark, when we're talking about the amnesty push? Every time I see these stories, I think of you. You've been a tireless worker in bringing the truth for many, many years. Well before I came to 580KIDO, I've had you on in just about every place I've been. What dangers are we facing, and could we see a Republican capitulation to amnesty?
Well, we could, I think this year we're relatively safe. It doesn't mean that they won't try, but I just don't think there's going to be an amnesty on the president's desk by the end of this year. The danger, if you call it that, is if the Republicans take the Senate, which I'm a Republican, so I mean I'm for that, but that also presents a potential problem because if the Republicans have the House and the Senate, they then may figure, let's do, you know, our own version of an amnesty bill and see and kind of make the president sign, and that way we can take credit for it somehow. It's a fantasy, but that, I think, is what they're going to want to try to do. But for this year, I just don't see any way they're going to be able to push, actually get an amnesty through Congress. They're going to try, but I don't think they're going to succeed.
Mark, we appreciate it. If people want some more information, what can they do?
We're online at CIS.org, Center for Immigration Studies, so CIS.org. All of our publications are there, and we have a blog with every day there's new things being posted, sort of mini stories as well.
Thank you for your great work, sir.
Well, thanks a lot. Bye.